Take your time, but we'll wrap up this morning with Rodriguez-Asalde versus First Class Parking Systems, case number 16-16814. 1 second, Mr. Zeidel. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning. I'm Jay Zeidel on behalf of the three appellants. Our appeal focuses on what we believe to be error on the district judge's part, not finding FLSA jurisdiction applicable to a valet parking company. The years involved are from 2011 to 2015, and as the judge's summary judgment order states, and I think that this will help us to get through the oral argument quickly, the fact, and I'm reading from footnote number 4, page 5 of the summary judgment order on appeal, the fact that plaintiffs handled walkie-talkies, pins, uniforms, valet tickets, and other items that originated out of state does not change the intrastate nature of their work. Those other items were a time clock and passenger luggage or visitor luggage that some of the plaintiffs, or at least two of them, used to help the out-of-country or out-of-state guests take up to their condominium or rooms that they were assisting with. So for purposes of this appeal, the district judge accepted the fact that all of these other items originated out of state. And she found that, nevertheless, that these items were not materials, as this court defined in the Polycarp decision, but rather defined them as goods subject to the ultimate consumer exception to coverage.
How does this case square with the Rodriguez versus Gold Star case that was decided this summer by the circuit?
This case has all of the other items that the valet parkers regularly used on a concurrent basis, not just the automobiles. Rodriguez only dealt with parking automobiles for customers and nothing else as far as interstate commerce was concerned. So this case deals with, even though this court did find that automobiles or the parking of automobiles by another plaintiff that worked for this company and the Rodriguez decision, that the automobiles were goods and that those goods had come to rest and were subject to the ultimate consumer exception, nevertheless, those goods required a lot of materials to be used along with them, and that's what this case involves, are those other materials, such as the parking tickets that had to be given to the guests that were parking their cars.
Rodriguez said that those are the sort of things that are the tools that are applied to the goods, which is the automobiles, that the automobiles is the business, and that there are other things that were used in connection with the valet parking of automobiles that didn't change the nature of the business, which was the cars.
Well, it may not have changed the nature of the business for that case, but I don't believe that Rodriguez held that valet parkers are exempt from overtime and minimum wages. I mean, that wouldn't be proper to exempt them as a class of workers via an appellate decision. But in this case, what we've shown is we've gone past the automobiles to show that these items, and this court defined what materials are in the Polycarp decision, which is the binding relevant case in this circuit for FLSA coverage. And materials are those items that are used predominantly by employees that are necessary or related to the principal function of the employer's business. And I think that it doesn't even require great imagination to understand why parking tickets and uniforms, walkie-talkies and pins and a time clock, as well as transporting visitor luggage, visitors who came from out of the country and out of state, why those items are related to a parking valet company's principal business. I mean, that doesn't, that's common sense. That nobody's going to give their car to, or no reasonable person would give their car, I should say, to somebody that is a valet parker without getting a parking ticket to identify it so that you could reclaim it at the end, any more than they would to somebody who wasn't in a uniform from that valet company.
It seems to me that pens, fail the necessary and related tests, because pens can be used in virtually any business. They're not connected any way to the valet business. So it seems to me that those don't meet the Polycarp materials test.
Well, that could be, Your Honor, but I think that the way that we would view that is that it is a weaker material, but nevertheless, without pens, how are valet parkers supposed to write down customer information or that person lives in unit number 10A? I mean, how are they supposed to do that to identify the ticket with the room that the customer is staying in or visiting? So I agree that it is a weaker material, but nevertheless, I think it's a necessary material. I don't know how else they're supposed to do it. I mean, if they've got an iPhone or something, they could log in the information that way, but they have to be able to inscribe that information some way.
It seems to me that your best argument is with respect to the valet tickets. Could you focus on those?
Sure. Well, the valet tickets had a stamp on them that said Shreveport, Louisiana. And there was and the district court I'm reading her summary judgment order that she accepted the fact that all of these items came from out of state. I mean, that's what her footnote says. I don't think that that it's necessary to read that order in any other way than the district court was viewing this as those items having come from out of state. The valet tickets, we submitted a valet ticket with sworn testimony from one of the plaintiffs that said that they regularly used these tickets that had markings on them from Shreveport, Louisiana.
So the only evidence that the tickets came from out of state, though, was the Shreveport, Louisiana on the ticket.
That, along with the plaintiff's testimony that he may have researched the issue as well online to find out where some of these items came from. Also, the walkie-talkies that the plaintiffs used in order to communicate with each other to say, hey, I'm bringing the car up now to make sure that the passenger's ready, et cetera, et cetera. Those also were researched by a plaintiff or two plaintiffs to show that they came from another country. But nevertheless, that wasn't an issue at the lower court. I mean, we don't even, the district court judge accepted the fact that all of these items came from out of state, but she said that these were goods nevertheless. And it's our position that you can't run a valet parking company without these items, granted some of them being weaker materials than others, but certainly the list of materials that we have here are indispensable and integral to a valet parking company for obvious reasons that we've cited in our brief. I know it's getting close to the lunch hour. I don't know if we rely on our briefs. We just, you know, our position is that the district judge, in all due respect, misinterpreted goods for materials in this case and subjected them to the ultimate consumer doctrine. I mean, just as laundry soap is a material to a washateria or a dry cleaners, just as china plates, for example, are materials to a catering company, parking tickets, walkie-talkies, uniforms.
Well, we've talked about the other ones, Mr. Zeidel, so let's finish up and close up the loop. What was the testimony or evidence in the record about the uniforms having been produced or moved in commerce?
Well, the plaintiffs, it came from their affidavits, and they said that I believe one of them said that their uniform was from Colombia. The other uniforms were from out of Florida, I believe other countries. One was made in China, I believe. But that came from the plaintiff's testimony, looking at the uniforms that they used. And once again, the district court judge accepted that. It appears that she accepted it from her footnote. And I know that the appellees raise all kinds of contentions in their answer brief to the effect that this may have been hearsay, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what this appeal is about, because the district court accepted those items from coming from out of state. And it's not hearsay because the employer's in a much better position to verify where its parking tickets come from, for example, where its time clock comes from, where its uniforms come from, where the walkie-talkies come from. I know that they say, well, they only lease the walkie-talkies, but that doesn't matter because there's nothing in the statute that requires that the employer buy the materials in order to give them to its employees in order to be covered under this statute. It says any person, if these materials come from any person, it doesn't just require.
The uniforms didn't come from the employer?
I don't think that they say that. They said that the walkie-talkies were leased rather than bought and given to the employees. I think that that's what their position is. But the uniforms, I don't think that there's ever any opposition to the fact that they were provided by the employer. So for those reasons, we rest on our brief. If the court doesn't have any further questions, we just think that this was a misinterpretation by the district judge of goods for materials, and it should have been the latter, and she used the former. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Dell, you saved your 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Coovin.
Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honor, I'd like to address the parking tickets directly as Judge Pryor had asked a question about them. The only testimony throughout the entire discovery process was that the valet parking tickets were purchased locally, and it was George Zulaga who testified that he would order them locally, that he would go to Fort Lauderdale and pick them up. And during his deposition, he said that there were printing presses in the background where they were being printed. The only evidence that came from the defendants regarding the actual tickets themselves, when they asked for them in discovery, the defendants responded that they didn't save the tickets because the tickets were disposed of in the course due course of business. And then
they didn't have any?
No, Your Honor. None. They didn't have any that they had used.
Oh, the ones that were used before. Got it.
So I'm sure they could have gone out and bought some and produced them, but the ones that they use are discarded afterwards.
Right, understood.
So what happens now is that we go through the discovery process. Discovery closes, and then we go into a hearing where the plaintiff in the case asked for an extension of the discovery period, of which the trial court denied that order. Then the first time that we ever see a parking ticket, it's provided by the one of the plaintiffs in the case in the response to the defendant's motion for summary judgment. And when we had asked for any and all documents that were going to be relied upon throughout the case, the plaintiff in his response, the plaintiff who produced the document, the ticket, said that he objected to it and then answered that he had none. So here we are at the, not only at the 11th hour, but at the 12th hour, where now all of a sudden this ticket has been produced. And if Your Honors will take a look at that ticket, which is a part of the record, you'll see that it doesn't say that it's printed in Shreveport, Louisiana. It doesn't say that it's printed anywhere. It says printed in the USA, and Florida being part of the USA. And the only record evidence in this particular case as to that particular parking ticket was from George Zulaga, who while he was being deposed, said that he went to Fort Lauderdale, he would order them in Fort Lauderdale, he would go to Fort Lauderdale and pick them up, and they were being printed there.
So your argument is the Shreveport, Louisiana could just be where the company is headquartered?
Absolutely,
located.
Your Honor. It could be copyrighted by a Shreveport company. I have no idea. However, throughout the entire process, plaintiffs could have gone and conducted discovery into that. Now what they'd like to do is they'd like to point out footnote 4 in the judge's order where she granted our motion for summary judgment. I'd just like to talk about some of the other issues as well.
Well, before you do that, I mean, you're basically asking us to do the summary. If we go to that point, right, if we disagree with you on the district court's major rationale, you want us to basically do the summary judgment over again, right, to conduct the summary judgment analysis ourselves, to figure out whether or not certain evidence is hearsay, whether or not certain evidence is probative, whether or not certain evidence creates an issue of fact about where a product or material originated and the like.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because her footnote 4, rightly or wrongly, assumes that these materials or items had originated outside.
And I believe, Your Honor, that the reason that she wrote footnote 4 like that is because she was construing all facts in favor of the plaintiffs, which is the proper way to do it.
So, you think she got that wrong?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You think she got that point wrong?
I believe that because it was put in a footnote and was not part of her holding.
No. Do you think she viewed the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs?
In that particular footnote, I think she did. And what she said was...
Did she do that correctly or incorrectly?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Was she right or wrong in doing that in footnote 4?
I think that she was right in doing it and to saying that even if I were to consider this, being that all of the arguments that defendants have already made here, it would still not change my decision. And the reason being is because it was subject to the ultimate consumer exception. So I think that's why it's in a footnote, Your Honor. And I think that if it had been in the dicta, I think it would be different. And I think if it was in the actual holding, then we probably wouldn't be here today.
So you think that there, if you look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs, you think there's an issue, I don't want to say of material fact, but you think there's an issue of fact as to whether or not the walkie-talkies, the pens, the uniforms, and the valet tickets originated out of state?
I don't think there's any issue that they did, Your Honor, because the record is totally devoid of anything that says different than that.
I'm a little bit confused then, because I thought you said that she had correctly viewed the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs.
I think the reason that we take it in the context of that it's in a footnote, Your Honor, is that she was saying even if,
well,
I would still find this way.
If she had said even if, I think I would agree with you wholeheartedly, but that's not the way the footnote reads. It says the fact that the plaintiffs handled these items, paraphrasing, that originated out of state. So,
and Your Honor, then I would then like to argue and to bring to your attention that while Mr. Zeidel brings the burden, he's saying that it's in order for it to carry the day for the plaintiffs in this case, that those particular items would have to be necessary or in some way related to the business. But that's not the standard. The standard is that it has to be significant and necessary to the business. So just
how do you distinguish soap for a laundromat or a dry cleaning service?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, the soap, it was not contested that the soap had come from outside of the state.
Right. So let's assume that and this is an assumption I'm asking you to make, that all of these items that the district court referred to in footnote 4 came from out of state. If they did, is summary judgment appropriate?
No, Your Honor. And the reason is because none of those items are significant and necessary as to valet parking cars. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, they don't even use valet tickets anymore. They're a thing of the past. They're not necessary.
Walkie-talkies are not important?
No, Your Honor. And my client, the only testimony as to the walkie-talkies is that my client did not own any walkie-talkies. They just leased them sometimes. And
for what purpose?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
For what purpose did they lease them?
I don't know. It was not discovered.
But didn't the plaintiffs have evidence through affidavits that they used walkie-talkies in their work as valets?
Well, actually, the testimony was that at one of the condo associations, one of the valet parkers had a walkie-talkie. He believed that it had been provided to him by the condo association, and it was so that he could communicate or that the front desk could communicate with him. And he worked night shifts, and so they wanted to be able to have communication. And as for the uniforms, again, this was the 12th hour. None of the issue of the uniforms ever came up throughout the litigation. The first time that we ever hear about uniforms is at the point when the plaintiffs are responding to the defendant's motion for summary judgment. All of a sudden, there are uniforms, and that supposedly these uniforms were purchased or that they were manufactured somewhere else. And just like when we argued in Rodriguez, Your Honors, is we could take this to the nth degree, which basically would say that since it's against the law for valet parkers to walk around naked and valet park cars, that the clothes that they're wearing, since they are manufactured outside of the state of Florida, that there would then be interstate commerce for every single business where you have to wear clothes. And that's the extreme to this.
Well, but in this case, the employer is providing a certain set of clothes to distinguish the valet attendants from anybody else, right?
I'm not sure if that's why they provided them, Your Honor. It's not in the record. And that question was never asked.
Well, why couldn't a reasonable person figure out that part of what makes or drives an employer to use uniforms is to distinguish its employees in one way, shape, or form from other people or even people within a company?
Yes, Your Honor. And once we had that, once we were at that point, we would then have to go to the next point, which would be the analysis, which would have been plaintiff's burden in this case to argue that those uniforms were significant and necessary to running a valet company. The throughout the entire briefing process of the motion for summary judgment, the response, and the briefing process here, Your Honor, never once has plaintiffs ever argued, except for when he came up orally just now and gave the standard of necessary and related, has anyone ever argued that any of these items were significant and necessary to running a valet parking company?
That argument wasn't made below, you say?
It was not, Your Honor.
So even in the laundry case, if you think of a laundry and its soap, I doubt that laundry soap is ever manufactured, and I don't know of any soap laundry producer in Georgia, yet we have lots of laundries. The fact that that came from out of state, assuming it came from out of state, the shirts are what are being laundered, or the dresses or whatever, and they're returned to the ultimate consumer. It seems to me that if we say that let's look at all the different things that people use in connection with their business that are touched by the employees to apply to the ultimate purpose of the business, there's not a single business that would not be covered by this statute, and it would make this statute, this part of the statute, meaningless.
Actually, I don't necessarily agree with that, Your Honor, and the reason being is because there's a distinct difference between materials and goods, and only goods are ever subject to the ultimate consumer. So the material, the soap, would actually be a material. And even though it's consumed or by the business, it doesn't make any difference. So it's actually a subcategory, and that difference was basically given to us by this court in the Polycarp decision. So in Polycarp, what happened was is that they were making a distinction between materials, which is actually part of the a new word that was added to the handlings clause, which before it was goods. So, and the goods were subject to the ultimate consumer exception. In the original Rodriguez case, Your Honor, the court, in a published decision, said that the cars were more akin to the shirts that were being laundered than the actual soap. So I believe that most businesses, a very large percentage of businesses, are all covered by the FLSA. And there are only a very small exception that would ever be totally intrastate, such as a demolition company, a company that was demolishing buildings, that type of a thing.
Maybe I'm hung up on Rodriguez, which I've read five or six times. And you get to the final holding, it's a valet parking case. Because we hold the cars Rodriguez parks are goods and not materials, the ultimate consumer exception operates to exclude from the category of covered goods the handling of the cars it issued, because they were returned to the person who delivered the cars to the valet company. Ultimately, they're delivered back. In that case, they affirmed summary judgment for the valet car parking company.
And, Your Honor, it's almost exactly the same case. The only difference is there are five different items. We're talking about pens, radios, shirts, valet tickets, and one other, I'm sure. But, again, I think that if no one
which
has...
Which I would say are incidental to the parking of valet cars, which is what the court, I think, in Polycarp and also here says. You have to look at what the business is and see what's incidental to the business, and that... And just because they might be materials doesn't mean that the business now is something that's covered by the FSLA. You have to look at the nature of the business.
My understanding is, Your Honor, is that materials are never subject to the ultimate consumer exception. But I think where this case, the reason that this case should be affirmed is because while we may have these materials, they may be materials, I believe they're actually goods, Your Honors, but the fact is that it was never argued throughout the entire briefing process. It wasn't argued in the motions for summary judgment, in the motion for summary judgment, or in the response to the motion for summary judgment, nor was it argued in the briefing here that any of those goods were significant and necessary to conducting the business that my clients did, which was parking cars in South Florida.
Just a technical question. On summary judgment, if you're saying these items were first brought up, were they because they were there was a declaration or affidavit attached? From whom was the declaration or affidavit? The plaintiffs or somebody else?
Well, if the I'm sorry, Your Honor, one more time.
Just trying to figure out how did these, you're saying they were first raised on summary judgment.
Actually, the ticket was first brought into evidence at the summary judgment stage, Your Honor.
Or was that because somebody signed an affidavit saying this is a ticket?
Yes, Your Honor.
And who did that?
And we challenged that and we moved the court to strike it. But the prejudice to the defendants in this particular case would be that you hold on to the ticket all the way until summary judgment stage. Then what happens is that I don't have it. The discovery is not opened after two requests by the plaintiff to open it. And it's there in the record. I should have been able to have the opportunity to ask the person who signed the affidavit, where did you get this ticket? The ticket doesn't even have a year on it. It just has a month and a day. I should have been able to ask him, where did this ticket come from? Why didn't you produce this ticket during discovery when we asked you for it and you said none? And where is it that you know that you think that this ticket was produced? And they totally hang their hat on one thing. It says Shreveport, Louisiana on the ticket. That's it.
The district court denied the motion to strike as moot. Isn't that right?
That's a hard question to answer, Your Honor. I'm not really sure. I mean, if you read the bottom of the order for motion for summary judgment, that would seem to be it. And then probably then we go right back circular to footnote 4, where she says, look, even if I did consider it, it's still the ultimate consumer exception, which means it's a good, which means that it doesn't come into the analysis, which means that summary judgment was properly granted.
But with regard to the argument you're making about the affidavit and the ticket, that's something the district court would have to decide in the first instance. You're not asking us to decide that.
No, Your Honor, and I think what she said in footnote 4 when we go right back is, look, even if I did consider it, which I kind of did, it's still the ultimate consumer exception. So if the court is going to go back and say that the ultimate consumer exception doesn't apply, then I would ask the court to go back and consider that motion as well. As where did this come in and how did this prejudice the defendants throughout the motion for summary judgment? I think that's only fair. We have it on this hand, we have it on that hand.
I just wanted to figure out how it got in the record.
Yes, sir.
Now I know.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Coovan. We appreciate it. Mr. Zeidel.
I started out by saying that to simplify the oral argument, that we would assume that the district judge accepted all of these materials from coming from out of state. I guess that I shouldn't assume. What happened was, is that if you review the docket, as of June of 2016, the parties had consented to the magistrate with an agreement to extend discovery for another 90 or 120 days. The consent was filed. 3 days later, Mr. Coovan retracted it. Judge Cook had a hearing, was very upset why he filed it in the first place. He said he didn't read the line on the email that said to extend discovery for another 120 days, and that's what happened. So that the court understands. Second thing is that we propounded written discovery, and we asked where this stuff came from, and we were stonewalled. They just burned out the discovery period and basically said to admit that on a regular and recurrent basis for the time frame, plaintiff was handling or otherwise working with parking stubs receipts that were on paper that had ink that was manufactured or produced outside of Florida. Objection, overbroad, irrelevant. Because the parking receipts were purchased in Florida. Other admissions were the same thing, denied, denied, denied. So we tried to do this. This was the consequence of a rocket docket discovery that was imposed by the district judge. And she considered all of this, obviously. I mean, that footnote says what it does to the summary judgment order. In conclusion, this is a coverage issue. Coverage under the FLSA is supposed to be broadly interpreted, not in a grudging manner. It's a humanitarian statute. And it has to be interpreted as broad as congressional intent allows for it to be interpreted. To quibble over whether or not a parking ticket or a walkie-talkie, pens, shirts, uniforms, and these other items were goods or materials, I would say this, that if there's even a doubt, I don't think that there's a doubt, because I think that common sense dictates that a parking valet company cannot be managed or run. Nobody is going to leave their car with somebody that doesn't have proper ID and a way of locating that vehicle. A reasonable person would not do that. But let's just say that there's doubt that these were goods or materials. Well, you know what? If there's doubt, it should be construed in favor of coverage, because that's what all the cases say. That's what Polycarp alludes to. When it comes to coverage, liberal interpretation is required. As far as congressional intent allows. We tried to get Rodriguez reconsidered en banc because we think that the parking of those cars, that the cars, when valets take them, are materials and they're not goods subject to the ultimate consumer protection. That motion for rehearing en banc was denied. If somehow this panel could get it to be reheard en banc, I think that that would be an excellent, excellent way of trying to reconcile all of these decisions. But even if you don't, this case is factually distinguished by those extra materials that were used recurrently by two or more employees for this company during the relevant time period. As far as the summary judgment response was concerned, maybe Mr. Cuban didn't read it before coming today or forgot about it, but at page 12 and 13, we do argue that these materials were integral to the employer's business. If you specifically at page 12 and 13, and I quote, plaintiffs handled materials such as the walkie-talkies, pens, et cetera, that had a significant and not incidental relationship to the defendant's business activity. And then we quote plaintiff Sansonovich's affidavit where he details why these things were important to the business. So I think that Mr. Cuban was mistaken when he represented that. The only other matters that I'd like to bring to the panel's attention is that we are asking that this court find that FLSA jurisdiction applies, because we think that there's enough in the record to do that. Obviously, we would like for it just to be decided at this level. However, before deciding whether or not to return it to the district judge to resolve factual disputes, if the panel decides that there are factual disputes, I would just respectfully ask that the court review one of Judge Altanaga's orders from a similar situation, dealing with stamps on products in another FLSA case. And basically, she goes through a detailed analysis as it being within the court's discretion whether or not to accept items that have a marking on them without authentication, and also cites case law that the whole hearsay issue involved is really mitigated in these type of employer-employee circumstances where the materials come from the employer, because the employer is much better seated to find out. I mean, the hearsay is being able to challenge somebody else's assertion. And who's in a better position besides an employer to challenge that these tickets were in Shreveport? The employer said, I don't know, or objected in discovery to producing what they had. But to come at this stage and to say that they were prejudiced, we don't think that it's proper for this panel to decide in the first instance. And the second one is that I would just like to cite this order for the record. It is Judge Altanaga's prior case, 092247, Civ Altanaga. It's document number 127. And at the end of that post-trial order, she details about these items that have stamps and when employees just testify to them and when the actual product has to be brought in. But like I say, I don't think that we even need to get there, because the district judge decided, she said, that these items, even taking it as that they originated from out of state, they're still goods and we lose. And that's just wrong. So we ask for that to be reversed in one way or another. Thank you.
All right, thank you both very much. We're in recess until tomorrow morning.